When we got home, I was sent to my room. I was thinking about running away. I thought they didn't love me anymore, and when Mommy came upstairs and seen me packing, she was crying because she was sorry. I knew what she was thinking. She was thinking how she felt about scolding me, but that wasn't it. She was crying because she was happy. My Aunt Sandy had a baby boy. When she told me, I stopped packing and started laughing for joy. Aunt Sandy got home from the hospital, and she let me hold him. I dropped him. Oh, I started crying. The baby was laughing, but Mom looked like she was going to kill me. Aunt Sandy said that was all right. Mommy was probably thinking, I'm going to break her neck. Mom was really mad. I was frightened. I ran upstairs. I was thinking again about running away. I started to pack. I was all packed, and Mom came up and told me she was sorry. She felt terrible. I thought it was because of me. Mommy said it wasn't, but I felt that whatever she said, it was still my fault. I was starting to go downstairs with my suitcase when Mommy called me. She said she loved me, and that's the end.
The author of that runaway story was Deborah from Auburn Elementary, 5th grade. But it could be you.
Most of us, sometime in our growing up, have contemplated running away. Sometimes we just thought or threatened. Sometimes we actually went. And chances are we came back. In Russell Hoban's A Baby Sister for Frances, Frances, the little badger girl, runs away. Why? She's jealous of her new baby sister. "Well," said Frances, "things are not very good here anymore. No clothes to wear, no raisins for the oatmeal. I think maybe I'll run away." "Finish your breakfast," said Mother. "It's almost time for the school bus." "What time will dinner be tonight?" asked Frances. 6:30, said Mother. "Then I shall have plenty of time to run away after dinner," said Frances, and she kissed her mother goodbye and went to school. After dinner that evening, Frances packed her little knapsack very carefully. She put in her tiny special blanket and her alligator doll. She took all the nickels and pennies out of her bank for travel money, and she took her good luck coin for good luck. Then she took a box of prunes from the kitchen and 5 chocolate cookies. "Well," said Frances, "it is time to say goodbye. I am on my way. Goodbye." "Where are you running away to?" said Father. "I think that under the dining room table is the best place," said Frances. "It's cozy, and the kitchen is near if I run out of cookies." "That is a good place to run away to," said Mother, "but I'll miss you." "I'll miss you too," said Father. "Well," said Frances, "goodbye," and she ran away. Frances sits under the table, eating her prunes and cookies, and listening to her parents tell each other how they miss her and how sad it is that little Gloria will not have a big sister to look up to. And finally, she decides that Gloria does indeed need a big sister, and she telephones her parents. "Hello," called Frances from the dining room. "I am calling on the telephone. Hello, hello, this is me. Is that you?" "Hello," said Mother, "this is us. How are you?" "I am fine," said Frances. "This is a nice place, but you miss your family when you're away. How are you?" "We are all well," said Father, "but we miss you, too." "I shall be home soon," said Frances, and she hung up. So Frances comes home and is welcomed with love and cake, and it's a happy ending. There are lots of other running away books for little kids. I'm Going to Run Away by Jean Thompson, Runaway Ralph by Cleary, and My Mean Old Mother Will Be Sorry by Alexander, to mention only a few. There are lots for older kids, too. I read and reread Toby Tyler or 10 Weeks with the Circus when I was in 4th or 5th grade. Nowadays, kids read My Side of the Mountain by Jean George, about Sam Gribble, who runs away and lives on his great-grandfather's land in the Catskills for a year. Or The Mixed-Up Files by Konigsberg, where Claudia persuades her miserly little brother James to run away with her to the Metropolitan Museum in New York, and they live for a week sleeping on the elegant Louis XIV beds and buying their food and doing their laundry with the money that they fish out of the fountains. That pair is so obnoxious that if I were their parents, I'd be sorry if they ever came home. I never ran away as a kid. My sister Patty did. She was about 6, I'd guess, and we were up at the lake for the summer. Patty got up very early one morning. She took 4 plums with her. She went down the shore as far as the public beach. and she sat at a picnic table and ate one plum for breakfast. Then she went on up to the road, and she ate the second plum for lunch. She crossed the road and walked over to Lauderdale Lake, and there she ate plums 3 and 4 for supper. She was thinking, though, pretty soon it'd be getting dark. Where would she go? And how terribly everybody must be feeling back at the cottage, because Patty wasn't there anymore. So she hurried home, and she found that everybody was still in bed. They hadn't waked up yet, and she hadn't even been missed. My cousin Eugene used to threaten to run away, and my aunt would say to him, "Tell me when you're ready to go, and I'll fix you a hard-boiled egg." Gene would get his suitcase all packed, but somehow he could never take that final step to go and ask for his hard-boiled egg. It never occurred to him that he could go without the egg. As far as he knew, the egg was part of the ritual of running away. When he was grown up and drafted into the army in World War II, he went to his mother and he said, "I guess you can make me my hard-boiled egg now." I was recently getting the stories of an elderly woman down on tape. Her name is Mildred, but we called her Moo Moo. We knew her when we were little. And I'd let you hear her own runaway story in her own voice, except the tape is too faint. But here is what she said. "I threatened to run away, and Mother said, 'Well, if you don't like it here, probably that's the best thing to do.' That surprised me, and I stood and stared at her with my mouth wide open, and she said, 'You'll have to hurry along, though. It's after 3 o'clock, and it'll be getting dark pretty soon. You want to get over the ridge before dark, don't you?' 'And where'll you go then?' 'I don't know.' Then she said, 'You could stop at Jim Hooper's, maybe, for the night.' Jim and his wife were both feeble-minded people, and they had several little, oh, pitiful children, just to look at them so bad. And I'd been in that house once with Father when he went to hire Jim to come help him do something about the farm. He needed an extra pair of hands. And I saw that awful house with the filth in it, and the dogs and the cats and the children. Oh, my, it was so pitiful to look at, sickening to me. And so the idea, if I couldn't get any farther than Jim Hooper's that night. Finally, I didn't say anything more. My sister wanted to start a game, and Mother said, 'Why, Mildred, are you going to play? I thought you were going to leave us.' And I said, 'Well, can't you just let me rest a little while?'" Most of our running away is based on real or imagined grievances, which are plenty big at the time, of course. But things get tolerable, or the alternative of going is worse than staying, and so we stay. This isn't always the case. And to some of you, this will be a painful and not an amusing topic. Sometimes life is so awful that kids do run away, usually when they're old enough to figure that they can perhaps make it on their own. These stories are often sad indeed, and the national statistics on runaway kids are really frightening. I caught a ride out to the station today with a man I know slightly, and I asked him if he'd ever run away. "Yes," Richard said, "and I didn't come back." "Where'd you run to?" I asked. He answered, "I didn't have any place to run to. I lived 3 months at the train depot. A friend used to bring me food, and I went to school every day. My parents didn't care enough about me to hunt for me and bring me back." More fortunate was Tom, another grown man who did have a place to run to. Here's part of his story. He was in a class. "When we talked about running away in class recently, it seemed to me we treated the subject rather lightly. Running away was amusing, poignant at the time maybe, but amusing in retrospect, as if we had to be able to laugh at everything that's happened in our lives. I know we must have treated the subject with more sensitivity than that, but I no longer have strong impressions of that part of the conversation. For a moment, I felt strangely out of sync with the class. Running away has always been serious to me. When I was younger, I ran away twice, and I stayed away both times, intentionally and after negotiation with my parents. These were great traumatic moments in my life. But never was there any doubt. I was always confident I was doing right. I was serious about it. I had to be serious, because I was shaping my future each time I ran. That, I felt, was not a subject to be taken lightly." He then describes at length the family situation with his father and stepmother, very grim, that caused him to run away in eighth grade, and here is a paragraph that concludes that section. At school that day, I decided I had no other alternative but to leave home. I said nothing about it that night, but discreetly got all my belongings together so they would be easy to pack the next day. I even stole some Kool-Aid and cans of Vienna sausage from the kitchen. Hattie left for work before I went to school the next morning. She wouldn't be back before my normal return time. That was just as good because it gave me the opportunity to write her a note announcing my permanent departure. So I came home from school that afternoon to pack. Jill followed me around the house, making sure I had everything. "You left some shorts out on the clothesline," she said. We laugh about that now, but we were dead serious then. Jill was to run away 2 years later and live with neighbors across the street. I took a cab over to Missouri to my mother's, where I was welcomed with open arms. I came back to Kansas every day for a week and a half, though, to finish the quarter at school and to deliver my papers. Tom lived with his mother for 2 years, but things were pretty grim there, too, and in 10th grade he called a beloved aunt and uncle, told them his plight, and with their consent ran away again, this time to live with them and their four children. They became his foster parents. He'd found love and kindness. He'd found a home. Sometimes the situation is intolerable, but we can't run away in our bodies. But there are other ways of running away. We've all done this one, and not necessarily because we can't stand where we are, but we just like to be someplace better. That's runaway in our minds. For instance, when we're bored at school and imagine ourselves in another place, that's running away for a bit. The teacher calls that daydreaming, and one of you wrote in a little poem. The teacher is talking, I'm dreaming, but I hear every word she says. John has run away, but he's kept one toe or ear in the classroom, like the night crawler that keeps the tip of its tail in its hole for safety. And don't think your teacher hasn't run away. The grown-ups who write on this topic often say, I didn't run away as a kid, but now I'd sure like to run away for a few days and have some time for myself and peace and quiet and be free from responsibility. One wrote, I have a very private place in my head that I can run away to, and others indicated this too. I know that that's healthy and normal for all of us. But if we run away into our heads and can't get back, have to stay there, don't keep our tails in the real world, that's dangerous. It's mental illness, usually brought on by not being able to cope with the hardships of the real world. There's a fine book about this, The Boy Who Could Make Himself Disappear, by Kin Platt. Roger learned to disappear into his own skull, and it took love and kindness and therapy to bring him back. Another way to run is to find a real spot close to home, where you can disappear for a while, an all-alone spot, a think spot, the top of a tall tree, a hidey hole in the attic or the basement. One of you wrote in about using the foot of the clothes chute, soft and private. The advantage of a tall tree or a boat, which I often use, is that you get a fresh perspective on the world. You see it from the top or spread out, and you might realize that the waves will rock you but can't tip you over if you keep the boat in the right direction or row a bit. And often the troubles fall into place. You're more able to cope from being away for a while. Have you ever run away or thought about it? Did you actually go? Come back? Tell us the story of your running away, be it funny or dreadful, imagined or actual. Or have you a runaway spot in a tree or an attic? Have you a very private place in your head?